This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Layla Mudin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. And I'll remind you, she is also available for consultations. You can come to the Hoffman Center and you can get a regular workup with me. And she'll be part of it because every patient sees Layla. But if you have a doctor and you like your doctor and you want to keep your doctor, as is so often said, you can just have a consultation with Layla, and she'll also work with you long distance, which is a service that I don't offer. Patients have to come to the office, have a complete medical workup when they undertake a course of treatment at the Hoffman Center. But Layla can offer you nutritional advice independently. Check out drhoffman.com to find out how you can become a patient of the Hoffman Center or a patient of Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. All right, Layla, what's our next question, please?
We've got an email from Cecily. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, love your podcast. Thank you so much. I'm 60 years old. I need advice on my fitness goals. I'm active. I walk at least 3 to 4 times a week, 3 miles 4 times a week. I play tennis. I cycle. I'm super healthy. I'm at a good weight. My question is about raising my heart rate. Even cycling doesn't seem to get it up much. Even with all this activity, do I still need to do something more strenuous to get my heart rate higher? How long and how often?
Interesting question. So how old is this person?
She's 60. And if she's doing the same steady rate and the same, if she's hiking the same trail or cycling the same trail and not going farther than that, then maybe she's not
conditioned to
herself enough.
She's conditioned to it.
She's conditioned to it. What you said. Yeah.
Right. So she is well conditioned.
That would be the first possibility.
The moderate amount of exercise that she wants to do, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's all to the good. If she wants to take it to a higher level, and, you know, I'm a little older than she is, and I wear a pulse meter when I exercise, and my goal is to hit a higher pulse rate. When I'm running, that pulse rate could be, since when I'm running steady at a good pace, that pulse rate is 135. If I'm really going into the red zone, if I'm climbing a hill, you know, or really pouring it on, I could go as high as 150 or so. I never go higher. It's almost like I've got a, some sort of regulator on my heart rate that just doesn't let it go above a certain level.
If you do the actual equation of doing 220 minus your age,
that's
pretty much your max then in the 150s.
So, and that doesn't always, that's not always applicable, but, so I kind of agree with your proposition. She may require, if she wants to, gain greater fitness, do what's called HIIT, high intensity interval training. In other words, whatever she's doing, just pour it on for a short period of time, 30 seconds, a minute, perhaps extend it to 90 seconds, wear a heart rate monitor, see if she can get it up. That would represent a higher level of conditioning. Alternatively, some people have a slowed down heart. For one reason or another, certainly medication can slow the heart, prevent it from rising. The most common cause, and it's probably not applicable here since you didn't mention it, is that people are on medication that slows the heart, like beta blockers, metoprolol, or Inderal, or, you know, any number of beta blocker medications. There are numerous ones that slow the heart rate. It's actually to the good, I think, that her heart rate, better slow than fast, although you can get to a point where your heart rate is too slow. When your heart rate gets below, 30 or 40, then you get what are called premature beats because the heart wants to compensate, speed up, and make up for the fact that it's pausing that it's going too slow. So and in that case, that's when people mm-hmm. need something like a pacemaker. You know, if the heart rate just drops too low, then there could be a problem. But that's not what she's talking about. I think you nailed it. I think that this really has sort of reached a, you know, and I think that's what a lot of people do, and that's fine because, hey, you know, we ought to give credit to her for being active. But if you really want to be, you know, pursue excellence, you can use a monitor to try and see if you can take it up a notch.
Right. Cecily, during your walks, your 3-mile walks 4 times a week, I would encourage you to walk up more hills. That could get your heart rate up if you're not already. And also try to break out into a little bit of a sprint during your walk for 20 mm-hmm. to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
If your knees permit. So, yeah, that could be something.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. Cecily, thank you for your question. Okay. We've got another email here. I don't have a name, but I'm assuming this is a female because it kind of sounds a little bit. You emphasize so much on people wanting to lose weight. How about people who want to gain weight? I do not have an eating disorder, but I do have intolerance to gluten, corn, dairy, soy, nuts, eggs, seafood. I've had stomach issues all my life, and I'm 63.
Wow.
When I stopped eating all these foods, I lost 25 pounds, but I felt great. But I'm always starving, I cry a lot, and then I eat a food I'm not supposed to. I'm down to 110, I don't want to go any lower. What can I do? Okay, first of all, this person needs to get checked out for not just the food allergies, but if she's allergic to so many things, I'm calling her a she already.
Yes.
She sounds like a she to me. I'm wondering if she might have gluten intolerance, severe, or celiac disease.
Yes.
If she's had stomach issues all of her life, and now because she's not able to eat all these foods, she's crying. That's another way of not getting enough nutrition, is it's going to completely impact your mood.
Yes.
You know, just the deprivation, but not getting your nutrition.
I worry also I want to give her full credit for being observant and avoiding the foods that bother her. On the other hand, you know, I'm concerned that she's crying because it reflects a state of mind that might be part of food phobia, you know, where she, she's been burned by a certain number of real food intolerances, but now she's almost painted herself into a corner because she's eliminated this, eliminated that, eliminated the other thing. We see a few patients like that from time to time, and our goal is to expand their repertoire, reintroduce foods. So by testing, by reintroducing foods very carefully, also the problem may be in the gut. You know, the problem may be the microbiome is reacting to the foods. It's not truly an allergy, but there may be a disturbance in, like, leaky gut or an imbalance in the intestinal microbes. Restoring a balance or sealing the gut could be helpful. Small intestine bacterial overgrowth, you know, these are things that could be problematic. And, you know, we would like to expand the repertoire because it's not natural to be off so many foods. I mean, I'm all for eliminating foods that bother you, but, you know, I don't want to turn someone into an anorexic. You know, that's not good either. So the other new finding that's kind of interesting is that some people are deficient in something called DAO, which is diamine oxidase. And this is a new finding over the last just very few years that some people don't make enough of this. It's a substance that breaks down histamine. And if you don't break down histamine, you're going to have a lot of histamine in your body. You'll have a lot of allergic symptoms. And that could result in innumerable problems, skin problems, hives, nasal congestion, asthma, mood problems, bodily aches and pains, even depression, because, you know, it's sort of a brain allergy. So by supplying patients with DAO, and now there are supplements of DAO, and this is something that I plan to write about in the next few weeks, you can sort of recondition the gastrointestinal tract to accept more foods and gradually reintroduce those foods. So what about gaining weight? You know, so let's say patients are on a very restricted diet. What are some good weight gain foods that are pretty neutral that patients can take?
Well, she's eating a lot of carbs to gain weight. You know, adding back the foods that, you know, even if she has to go bland, things like brown rice or anything like that, or anything gluten-free, that could be helpful. However, she needs a full workup.
Right.
You know, this is somebody, I would want a full workup before I even talk about ways to gain weight.
Oh, I agree.
Because the gain weight will come after she's gotten healthy.
Right. But for, let's say we've got a more typical situation where people are underweight and they want to know, they want healthy foods to gain weight, you know, rather than go out and eat donuts or eat a lot ice cream. What are some of the healthier weight gain foods?
High caloric foods, good quality grass-fed meat, but cuts like ribeye and skirt, not necessarily sirloin. Foods like avocado, foods like, you know, olive oil, be liberal with it on your salads. Things like that. Nuts and seeds, certainly.
Coconut
fish
oil?
And shellfish. Coconut oil, absolutely. Coconut oil is wonderful.
You could add a couple of tablespoons of coconut oil to your to a smoothie. You know, maybe make a whey protein shake. Because we also have sometimes older patients who are underweight. They want to gain weight. You know, they're kind of wasting away. So for them, we also recommend the branch chain amino acids, in particular leucine. But also healthy fats like coconut oil, which is good for the brain, helps to stave off Alzheimer's, some omega-3, which is also helpful. Maybe something anabolic, like a little DHEA that actually helps to build muscle. In men, some testosterone. These are some, and even sometimes a little testosterone in women actually help to prevent sarcopenia, which is a wasting away kind of loss of muscle volume. It's inevitable with aging, but we want to forestall it.
Yeah.
And what type of exercise for someone who wants to gain weight?
For somebody who wants to gain weight, weight training.
Yeah. Thank you.
Because muscle weighs more than fat, and it's just a good way to go in terms of.
So, you mean somebody who's training for the marathon's not going to be able to gain weight?
Well, a lot of people who train for the marathon, they gain weight on the off season, you know, in February.
Yeah. Right.
Because still eating.
Some people say, well, I'm exercising like crazy, but I can't seem to gain weight. Well, maybe you're doing like 90% aerobic exercise, and that's just burning down your fat stores. And if you want to gain weight and you want to build muscle, actually, there was a recent study, and I recall it, where they took patients and they told them to increase their protein and to do strength training exercise while on a calorically restricted diet. So they all lost weight, but the ones who were on the strength training program and took extra protein, and these were older individuals, actually maintained their muscle mass, because usually you lose a lot of weight, you're going to lose, you know, quite a bit of fat, but you'll also lose some muscle. That's the problem with these crash weight loss programs, you know, like 40 pounds in 40 days. You're going to kill your muscles. You're just going to really end up, you know, without good muscle volume. So the way to maintain that is with a lot of protein and some strength training exercises that challenge your muscles to rebuild and maintain their volume.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I wish this person the best of luck, but she does need a full workup.
Yeah.
To get to the bottom of all these stomach issues and why there are so many allergies present. I mean, she's basically named the top 8 allergens almost.
This is not a DIY situation. I mean,
I
believe that the patient always is the final arbiter of what they tolerate, and I give her a lot of credit for figuring it out. She feels better. But sometimes a little coaching and guidance can rationalize a program like that.
Yes, yes. Best of luck to her.
Yep.
Okay.
We have time for another question.
Yeah. Well, speaking of stomach issues, here's another question we've got. What probiotics would you suggest for IBS?
Well,
on the type of IBS, what's causing the IBS?
Yeah, so unfortunately, there is no single probiotic that is the magic probiotic that's going to help everybody's IBS. So Activia is one that's highly promoted, that's in certain yogurt brands, that is allowed a claim that it actually helps IBS, which it does sometimes, because anytime you take a probiotic, it's likely your IBS will improve, but many times not, because many other factors are involved And sometimes the probiotic in question is the wrong probiotic. And sometimes
right.
the probiotic is up against too much. It's up against harmful yeast or other harmful bacteria that overwhelm it when you take it. So there is no single one. One might say, in general, patients who have diarrhea predominant IBS, because it's different IBSs. There's IBS that's constipation predominant, and they're hard stool, and you know, going with out of bowel movement for a day or two at a time. That's a form of IBS. Then there's IBSD, which is diarrhea urgency. Often Saccharomyces is helpful for that, because Saccharomyces is actually not a bacteria, it's a fungus. And it seems to help against yeast. It's a, the French call it fungus against fungus. And
Or it's a beneficial yeast,
Yes, beneficial yeast. So it may help that. It firms up the stool in patients who have one of the most challenging forms of diarrhea, which is C. difficile. So, you know, Dr. Hira's is fine, Culturelle is fine, but it really is a matter of trial and error to some extent.
Yeah, the different species, the different strains, it all kind of depends on how that person's IBS is presenting, as you say.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could go to the store and there would be like a probiotic for immunity, a probiotic for chronic fatigue, a probiotic for vaginal infections, yeast infections, and bacterial infections, a probiotic to make you have to enhance your mood, a probiotic to help you with your digestion and normalize your IBS. And those are all attributes of probiotics, but different different probiotics for different conditions. And there's actually some research into specific probiotics for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And we have one that we like, but it doesn't work for everyone. It's called SCD probiotic. It works for people who are on the SCD diet because it's compliant with the SCD diet. But, you know, it doesn't always work.
Right,
and
right.
It's subject of a lot of research because there's some really healing potential to probiotics. Believe you me, there's many tens of millions of dollars being invested in probiotic research because they're looking for answers to many problems that start in the gut. You know, probiotics for autoimmunity, for example. You know, maybe a certain probiotic will help patients with MS or rheumatoid arthritis. Certainly there's a possibility. But it's likely that it won't be just one. It may be a combo.
It will be different. You know, I was recently looking at a wonderful website for anybody who's interested. It's probioticadvisor.com. Probioticadvisor.com. There's a lot of good information for any of those who are interested in reading more about their mechanism of action, why the species is important, not just the genus, why the strains are important. So this is... this is just the tip of the iceberg in probiotic research.
Do we have time for one? We have time for one. Is this your thing as a short question? I don't think
a short
anybody's
question.
Asking a short question these days.
Let me see here. In one of your podcasts, you associate tomatoes, uric acid, and osteoarthritis. Okay. Is there any benefit to taking colchicine or allopurinol for severe or diffuse osteoarthritis pain?
Yeah, that's
interesting. Is that a short question?
That is a short question. You know, we can make it a long question, but in the short answer is no. You know, that while there is some evidence that tomatoes may raise uric acid and thereby worsen osteoarthritis, it's by no means clear that that's the only way in which tomatoes induce osteoarthritis in some people, not everyone. It's very individual.
Right.
So
it's a nightshade. Avoid the tomatoes if you have osteoarthritis.
Or not, because it may not make a difference. But you probably have to get off them for a couple of months to see if it makes a difference. And that's for the tomatoes, potatoes, you know. So that's in the literature that you know, in particular, tomatoes seem to... they didn't say anything about nightshades.
Tomatoes in particular,
Yeah. So
I rarely hear a person say, you know, I ate eggplant and my joints hurt. It's mostly tomatoes more than anything.
But it would seem to me that there are other foods that generate higher levels of uric acid that would also have similar effects. So some people might say, gee, my whatever I ate red meat, my joint pain is worse. I guess on that basis that would happen. But then you know, there are medications that lower uric acid, and I have a couple of our patients on them, but
uric acid is also raised by insulin resistance.
Right, which comes from too much in the way of sugar and carbs and fructose.
Yeah,
but I got to see, these medications have side effects. Colchicine causes diarrhea. Allopurinol can cause weird side effects sometimes. So while many people harmlessly take those medications, I don't think it's worthwhile in an effort to cure osteoarthritis to use them. Because gout is one thing. Osteoarthritis may be, have certain features of gout, but not always.
Right. Right.
Really interesting question.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Gabe, for that question.
Good question. All right. So that wraps up today's edition of Intelligent Medicine Podcast, our weekly Q&A with Layla. And once again, a reminder that we have a Hoffman Center store. You can access it via drhoffman.com. Just click on the box that says Shop, and you can find supplements of excellence there. And you can kill two birds with one stone. You can optimize your health with the finest quality supplements available at reasonable prices. And you can help to subsidize our continued efforts to bring you free information like this podcast. We don't charge anything for the podcast. We're very happy to accept your patronage of our Hoffman Center store, where we offer supplements, the very self-same supplements that we offer to Hoffman Center patients, high-quality supplements, guaranteed to be effective, and personally selected by yours truly and our Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla. So these are supplements that we believe in that can really make a difference for you. Thanks very much for joining us. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
And thank you for making us reach the milestone of over 4,000 likes on Facebook. We're looking forward to sharing lots of information with you if you like us on Facebook. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.